Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast. The podcast with enduring popularity, surpassed only by that of Weebles. I'm your host, Pete Pollock, and this week on the show, we're looking at a little movie I like to call The Lost Weekend. So stay tuned, and we'll see if we can find out what happened to it. So this is a film, The Lost Weekend, that when you're watching it, you kind of wish that everybody in it had watched the after-school specials on alcoholism. Of course, those hadn't been invented in 1945, so it's understandable that they just probably didn't know what to do when they had an alcoholic in their midst. And it turns out that Ray Milland, who's the main character by far, it's really just him for most of the movie. Ray Milland is an alcoholic from the word go. And you know, you've heard the term functional alcoholics. This guy is a non-functional alcoholic. There's no way around it. He is a complete wreck, and the only thing that probably keeps him from ending up in the gutter for the movie, the length of the movie, and the 6 years or so leading up to the time of the movie, when it's established that he's already been a heavy drinker, the only thing that keeps him out of the gutter probably is the fact that his brother takes care of him. And his brother and his girlfriend are the king and queen of Enablervania. These people are, you know, there's just no way around it. You know, the movie opens with Ray Milland and his brother getting ready to go out of town to a farm for the weekend, just to get away. And Ray, who his character is Don Burnham, he's quit drinking for 10 days, but he really hasn't quit drinking. You know, there's quitting drinking, which is what you do when you decide you want to stop drinking. And there's what's happened to him, which is his brother just refuses to buy him any more booze. So he didn't really quit. He just kind of ran out. So he and the brother are getting ready to leave. And he's got a bottle, unbeknownst to the brother. He's got a bottle hanging outside the window, and he wants to get rid of the brother for a few minutes so he can pack the bottle and take it with him for their weekend. Now, this is all in the first couple minutes of the movie. And the brother, of course, doesn't want to leave him. And then the girlfriend comes over and she says, "Oh, I have two tickets to the opera this afternoon." And Ray Milland, his character, convinces the brother to go to the opera with the girlfriend just to get them out of the house. And they buy it. Like I said, king and queen of Enablervania. They buy it. They leave. He goes straight for the bottle. Actually, the brother had found the bottle at this point, and he still leaves. So get that. The brother, you know, before he leaves to go to the opera, he finds the bottle, yells at Ray Milland's character, and then, you know, pours it down the sink and heads out. And so Ray Milland is, you know, sitting there freaking out and trying to figure out what he can do. And he discovers the cleaning lady comes over, and she makes a point, you know, of asking if her money's there. And she tells him where it is, and he goes and finds it. And he says, no, the money's not there. And let's just say that apparently in 1945, $10 will buy you a pretty good party. Because he goes down to the bar on the street, and he just starts hammering it back, and he's still planning on going with his brother away for the weekend, and he's hammering back, and of course he doesn't make it back in time. The brother is fed up, and he disappears, and it's pretty much just about the last time you see him in the movie. He just heads out. He can't take it anymore. You know, yeah, 6 years later, he can't take it anymore. Nice going. After buying him booze for the last 6 years, now you can't take it anymore. So he leaves, and the girlfriend goes on a hunt trying to find him. trying to find Ray Milland, and she can't. And he just goes out, he buys himself a couple of bottles, he takes it home, he gets good and plastered there. He goes out and basically spends the weekend getting on one of the most ungodly benders of all time. He just gets completely trashed. He trashes his brother's apartment. He gets caught for stealing. He tries to hawk everything that he, you know, it's classic, I guess, junkie behavior. You know, he tries to hawk everything he can get his hands on that might be worth something, including, you know, some stuff that's pretty important to the people around him. And he just goes nuts. And, you know, you're sitting there watching this. And I'll be honest, this is kind of a hard movie to watch. It's not real. And not that a movie should be comfortable, because it doesn't have to be comfortable. It can make its point, and it can be dark and gloomy and depressing. And that's all, you know, part of what makes sometimes makes a good movie a good movie. But, you know, you're along for the ride. And this guy is basically trashing his life. And he's not a sympathetic character, I don't think. The thing that in the movie they build up to is that he wanted to be a writer, and he had the ability to be a writer apparently early on, and then he just could never get more than a paragraph out at a time, and so he never was the writer that he thought he should have been. And let me tell you something, I've been there. If you can't get more than a paragraph out, you're really not a writer. So, you know, because you're not writing. So, you know, he calls himself a writer, but he's really not getting anything done. He goes into a huge depressive spiral, and you're along for the ride, and it's not fun to watch, really, in any way. I mean, if you know anybody who's been an alcoholic, it's probably really not going to be fun to watch. And even for me, who's been a little insulated from that, I guess, but it's kind of a tough movie to sit there and watch. Fortunately, it's only about an hour and 40 minutes. So, you know, at least you're not there for 3 hours watching this guy go down the tubes. I'm not going to tell you what happens at the end. You got two choices, a happy ending or a sad ending. It's one of those. But, you know, it's not a bad film. It's a little overwrought, I thought, because, and maybe this is just because of the era, but, you know, we've seen so many movies about, you know, junkies and alcoholics and whatnot, drug abusers, that you kind of, you know, there's been a lot of good movies since then where the dialogue is very incredibly real. And this is a little stiffer than that. So it doesn't ring as true, but in 1945, it probably rang pretty true. And it's a pretty brave movie, I guess, to have them put out. You know, you're coming out of World War II, and this is what you go to the theaters to see. So I'll give them kudos for that. But not really a movie that I'd want to see more than once, unless I was, you know, needed a downer. And how often do we need that? I mean, it's okay to watch a downer movie, but not really, you know, not really a comfortable hour and 40 minutes of your life. So I'm going to give this one, yes, you guessed it, it's a rent it. I see it once. It's pretty interesting, but it's not one you're going to want to gather the family around and watch at Christmas time by any means. Coming up next week on the show, the best years of our lives, which kind of sounds like the opposite of the movie I just reviewed. Maybe the Oscar voters needed a palate cleanser too after that one. I don't know. But it's a romance. It's the screen's greatest love story, according to IMDb, or at least according to the movie's own tagline. We'll see if that holds true. Until then, I'm Pete Pollack. This is the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast. You can check out the podcast and more always at bignoisybug.com. Write me at movies@bignoisybug.com. This is a production of the Big Noisy Bug Media Empire. Have a good week.